Hello and welcome to Stories of Success, your listening experience for self-development. It is here where I, Volker Baluda, as your host, regularly interview interim and fractional CXOs to understand and share more about the emerging group of people that serve companies as interims in leadership positions. Join me here on Season 5 to learn more about this space and how you can become a successful interim and fractional leader. If you want to find out more about myself or what Baluda Partners can do for you in the area of sales consultancy, please visit www.baludapartners.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please share and give me a 5-star rating. And now, without further ado, let's welcome my guest and please enjoy the show. So, on today's podcast, I welcome Ben Leck, who was the former COO, so Chief Operating Officer of Google Europe, and turned to being a successful portfolio professional himself. So, if I say I come to that in a minute. He actually founded the Portfolio Collective, and he was a portfolio professional himself. So, you know, we're going to look at it from both ends, if you like. And I met Ben actually a few years ago in Cannes. I don't know if Ben remembers, but I do.
I do.
Talking a lot about digital marketing. And I think he employed my neighbor, almost neighbor at the time. So mm-hmm. I haven't seen for a long time. So in his portfolio career, Ben focuses on supporting founders and investors in the startup and scale-up ecosystem. He's also a CEO and co-founder of the Portfolio Collective, as I just mentioned. So he founded that during the lockdown, which is a global community of thousands of portfolio professionals. And that's really, if I say in the first place, why I actually asked him to join me as an expert on the topic of interim and fractional leadership. And already you might have noticed in a lot of words here how you can call portfolio professionals. So anyway, so in this podcast, we will learn about your personal experience, as well as, if I say, your learning you captured from if I say, the community of the Portfolio Collective. So first of all, welcome to my show, Ben. Thanks for taking the time. So we could actually jump straight in there, which I already alluded to, right? So I mentioned portfolio professional, interim and fractional mm-hmm. leadership, which is the term I like to use, which I stole mm-hmm. from somewhere else. Then people have, you know, the term of freelancing and, mm-hmm. you know, there's so many words for, if I say, what people do. What made you choose a portfolio collective or portfolio professional? What is the right term? Is there a right term? Is there a wrong term?
It's funny. So when I launched what I now call my portfolio career, I didn't have a phrase for it. I just did lots of stuff. Yeah. But it's not very satisfying. Every time someone says, what do? That you mumble. And I just stumbled across the phrase portfolio professional. It was actually invented by a writer called Charles Handy, who was a management writer in, I think, the 80s and 90s. So I think he invented it. Certainly we didn't invent it. But it was a kind of a not well-used phrase, but I just thought that kind of makes sense. And so the way we define portfolio professional, really the clue is in the title. So portfolio means you have multiple sources of income. Yep. And professional means that you have advanced skills, you have high earnings, you are thoughtful about your career. So although this is absolutely part of the gig economy, it's not the end that gets commoditized. It's the end that actually has a great life and earns good money. Now, within that, all these other phrases, clearly, in my mind, all the other variants are a subset of portfolio career. So, you know, the first step is often a side hustle. So people who have a day job earn some money on the side. In my mind, that's step one, very often, of a portfolio career. You have multiple sources of income. Yeah. And your side hustle might be doing the same thing you do in a day job. Typically, it's something different. Yeah, another type of portfolio professional is a freelancer. So someone who typically is absolutely independent, but is more, let's say, responding to brief. So the employer, whether it's a company or an individual, says, this is what I need. Can you do it? What's the rate, et cetera? So it's kind of like an RFP process, but ultimately you can have a great career and earn good money. The third type that we talk about quite a lot is the multi-hyphenates, which is people who do multiple things that are not related to each other, but it just kind of, it feels good. It's how what they want to do. We have members. We've got one member who is a startup lawyer, a career advisor at Oxford University, and a circus entertainer. We have another member who is a helicopter test pilot and a beekeeper, and it's a money-making beekeeper, not a hobby. All sorts of interesting combinations, you know. And then the fourth type that we talk about a lot is a focused expert. This is where you say, I want to be the best at something and I want to be known to be the best. An example might be a drone lawyer or a fundraising expert or an SEO expert. But whatever it is, you say, I'm going to be the best at something.
Yeah.
And then through that, there's a lot of ways to make money. You can write a book. You can make speeches. You can be hired as a consultant. You can do interim work, part-time work, all sorts of other things like that. So in my mind, I know your two of your favorite phrases are fractional and interim.
Yeah.
They could be subsets of any one of those, but very often it would likely be in the focused expert. You say, I'm a world-class health tech CMO. I am a world-class Series A fundraiser, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And then based on that, you can be hired to do projects or interim or part-time or whatever it might be.
Yeah, I like that actually, because I mean, I position myself as interim and fractional, right? For better or for worse, I stole that. I think we can name scale-wise, right? I stole that from them. Yeah. They came up with a phrase and I really like it. I think it sounds great. But what you just mentioned, I'm trying to remember her name. I can put it in the show notes. I had her on my podcast many years ago, probably 2-3 years ago now. And she wrote a book, The Portfolio Career. And she wrote that book 10 years ago. So it was a thing then. And I remember reading the book at some point, and it was all about, in the future, a lot of people will have that. Mm-hmm. Right, like having more than one job.
Absolutely. The forecasts, depending on which forecast you read, but almost every single forecast says by around about 2030 or earlier, half of all professionals will be portfolio professionals. So people having just one job will be in the minority by 2030.
Wow, that's interesting. So if you predicted something 10 years ago, I need to go back in the book and have a look at that.
Yeah.
What you predicted.
Yeah, and most of the forecasts were written like 2018, 2019, 20, so before lockdown. And as we know, lockdown has accelerated most trends.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think I should ask you, Billy, you're the expert. Why do you think lockdown has accelerated things?
I think there's a few things. Number one, I think if I just, because one of the reasons I formed the Portfolio Collective, I'm sure we'll get onto that later, but in early lockdown, loads of my friends resigned or had a lot of time to think about life and said, I'm done with corporate life. So I think time to reflect and also time to really sort of, work from home and have a different type of lifestyle. People kind of said this whole no commuting is good. A lot of corporate stuff is nonsense, etc. I think there are other elements as well. Like when you're working from home, it's much easier to spin up a side hustle. There's no slave driver leaning over your shoulder, checking what you're doing. Yeah. On top of that, obviously all things digital exploded. Like every digital company did well. A lot of in real life companies struggled a bit in lockdown. But what that meant is there wasn't enough digital talent. So every employer all over the world started saying, well, I can hire from anywhere and I can hire fractional people. I need a project manager a day a week. Well, it doesn't matter if they have a day job. So a lot of people ditched their corporate jobs and said, I'm going to spin up a corporate career. Others kept their corporate jobs, but started spinning up a side hustle and getting a flavor for a portfolio approach to work.
Yeah. I mean, if I say, I would have said the same. And it's interesting, actually. I decided in 2018, 2019 to fully ditch the whole corporate world. And I never got more traction than in 2020, 2021, because there was more demand in terms of, I would have asked you later on as well, what's the interest from a company to do that, right? Why would they hire someone for 2 or 3 days a week? Right?
Yeah. Another big thing is most of our members make most of their money from the startup, scale up, and VC ecosystem. And one of the, there's been a massive explosion in startups and scale ups because VC money is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger every year. Most startups can't afford a whole team of professionals, all full time. Yeah. Even if you've just raised 10 million, if you try and hire a senior management team of 8 or 10 professionals, all earning a few hundred thousand a year each, you've blown through your money just on the senior team with no frontline staff. In a year or two. And so you just can't do it. So what do startups do? They have a couple of co-founders who earn below market salaries because they've got lots of equity. You hire 1 or 2 or 3 full-time grown-ups because they're the ones you can afford. And for the other, let's say functional leaders or business unit leaders, they'll hire reasonably junior people on relatively low salaries and get them a mentor or get some experts in or get a consultant in or whatever, but get all sorts of other independent, you know, hire an advisory board or get to, you know, whatever it might be, but bring in those more expensive professionals on some form of fractional basis.
Yeah. Would you actually, because you just mentioned it, would you classify, if I say non-executive directors, are they soon going to fall into the portfolio professionals as well?
Oh, they already do. So if you think about anyone who is a non-executive director is effectively some form of portfolio professional because it's very unlikely to be the only thing they do. Either you sit on multiple boards or you sit on a board but do some consulting, or you sit on a board and have a day job. But I think I'm not sure I've ever met someone who has one paying NED job and nothing else. You know,
yeah, no other source of income. Not very true.
The other thing, actually, just an interesting one, which is not a source of income, but it's interesting, is something else I've observed is a lot of portfolio professionals are also first-time angel investors. So one of the ways of making money is not just about earning money. It's also about investing money. So quite often, at least a lot of our members are mid-career, pretty successful, but clearly not made enough to buy a yacht and stop working. Although yachts are probably going cheap these days on the secondhand market. but basically, they're kind of saying, you know, I've saved up a few bonuses and I'd like to get involved in some angel investing. It's a good way to hedge my bets, plan for the future, etc. So we're definitely seeing that. And another thing that we're seeing from our members is not everything they earn is in cash. So quite often they'll say, I'll do some jobs for cash to pay the bills today. I'll do some jobs for sweat equity, you know, meaning like stock options or whatever in the startups they support. So you end up, and one of the beauties of a portfolio career, if you get it right, is you're hedging your bets. You have multiple sources of income, so you can't actually lose all your income. You can lose one source, but not all.
Yeah.
You're also hedging your, let's say, your pension or your retirement, because you're angel investing, but you're also earning stock options in companies you support. Yeah. Now, one of the many things triggered me into a portfolio career, and I've had stifles my whole life, but when I was looking at, I resigned from my last full-time job in 2019, and I was offered several really senior full-time jobs, like C-level jobs at Revolut and Deliveroo. They're kind of very attractive.
Yeah.
And I turned them down for a couple of reasons. One is I wasn't particularly passionate about fintech or delivery.
Yeah.
But the other is I thought I will work like crazy for probably 5 years because I don't sort of jump around too much.
Yeah.
And the stock options may be amazing or may do nothing. And I've definitely learned the hard way that you can have an amazing career and not that stock options don't always pay off. So having all your eggs in one basket when you're 50 odd years old is pretty high risk.
Yeah.
Whereas working with, I work with probably 5 to 7 startups at any one time, pick up a few options all over the place. I will never be a billionaire, not that I particularly want to be, but I've got a lot of small stakes in startups, some of which will look good. It's almost like it looks like a small VC.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But most of it is earned through sweat rather than through cash investments.
And I couldn't agree more. I mean, one of the reasons I started my portfolio, if I say journey, typical digital industry, I took a lot of redundancies. So I think I took 5 or 6 redundancies or 7 in my career. Usually, if I say typical scenario, American company buys European company, you hang around for a year. If you're lucky, you had some share options. Sometimes I did, sometimes I did nothing big ever, unfortunately. Still waiting for that day. it might not come.
Yeah.
As you say, right? Sometimes you wait forever. But every time you took a redundancy, you felt like your failure, right? Mm. And then you start somewhere else. And then, again, same scenario. You have a big job, you get good money, you get some share options, and then another company buys them. Mm-hmm. And the last one, I was like, why do I put all my eggs in one basket, right? If I had two companies on the go, if one gets bought, that's fine. I still have the other one.
Yeah.
And then I just find a second one, right? I'm never without a job.
Yeah.
So that's what triggered it for me, not being reliant on one. So yeah, definitely feel for that. Yeah, still waiting for the big payout myself. But you never know. But I did start my investor journey as well, funny enough.
Yeah.
You kind of feel you know where to invest now, but you never know, so, right?
I also feel like when you're, let's face it, angel investing is risky, but if you make enough bets through cash or sweat, you can get there. But if you're a large part of your portfolio is supporting startups, whether that's for free or for money or whatever, and mine's always a bit of both,
yeah,
you get to know what makes a good entrepreneur, what makes a good business. So for when I've actually invested as an angel for cash, I've typically been mentoring the founder for 6 months before I invest. So it's not a kind of high risk spinner wheel, pick something that has a nice logo, or even just, you know, pick something based on reading a deck. You've read the deck, you've seen the five iterations of the deck, you've seen the founder in action, you've seen what kind of team he or she hires, you've seen how they do or don't sort of start growing and pivoting as required. And that's a really nice position to be in. So although I'm sure I will have some investments or sweat equity that goes nowhere, I think my odds are good. And so far it's looking good just because I get to know them first.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
I mean, we jumped straight in with questions then. Should we go back a little bit? Why did you found the Portfolio Collective is one question, which I suppose, you know, if you want to allude a little bit to, you know, why you started your own portfolio career.
Sure. So I've had a portfolio career of sorts. I've had side hustles since I was at school. So it definitely isn't my DNA. I've always been making money on the side. So just to whiz through my early career, you can think of my early career in decades. Decade one, I was in the army. So I went straight from school to officer training, but picked up an engineering degree on the way. Decade two was kind of big business. So I went from the army to McKinsey as a strategy consultant. From there to Coca-Cola, did various sales and marketing jobs in Greece, Poland, and India. Ended up as the number two in Coca-Cola India. Then decade three was kind of big tech, ad tech, et cetera. So, but basically all tech. So I joined Google, spent 3 years there, ended up as the COO of Europe. Then I did various tech CEO jobs in either advertising or mobility. And my last full-time job before I resigned and went full-on with my portfolio career was I launched a company called Ola in the UK or in Europe. So I was employee number one in Europe. Ola is the Uber of India. So SoftBank-backed, taxi and mobility business, et cetera. So I was employee number one in Europe. I wrote the strategy, acquired about 350 licenses all over Europe. Hired a team of about 60 odd people, launched in 10 cities in the UK, got revenue to over 100 million run rate within a year. So arguably going well. And then I resigned, and I resigned for two reasons. One is I realized when you combine SoftBank billions with sort of Indian disorganization, it was quite high risk given that it was a regulated industry with my name and all the licenses. And so there was a risk that at some stage I would be banned from being a director of companies, go to jail, whatever. It wasn't in my life plan. So the frustrations were kind of annoying. But the other thing in parallel is I had my side hustles and I was loving them, but I didn't have much time for them because I had a very intense full-time job. And my side hustles then and still now were number one, working with startups. So whether that's angel investor, board member, mentor, consultant, simplistically Series A and above would pay me, the rest wouldn't, but maybe I'd get some sweat equity, maybe I would invest. Then the second part of my portfolio is working with investors, whether that's helping VCs in Silicon Valley find things in Europe to invest in, helping investors do due diligence on acquisitions, helping large investors understand Google, Facebook, et cetera. And then the smallest part of my portfolio is kind of thought leadership. So the odd speech at a conference and a bit of teaching at Oxford University. So it was all amazing and I was loving it all, way more than my day job, but I was time restricted. And so I thought, I've got a portfolio career. It's probably averaging 6 to 8 hours a week. It's actually making okay money in 6 to 8 hours a week. If I ditch my day job, A, I could make more money, but B, I could have more fun. And so I just resigned from my day job and started spinning up all those side hustles into effectively a very similar portfolio career, just with 40 hours a week instead of 8. So that was going really well. I was loving life and probably talking about it a lot. I'm a chatterbox and I was having fun. And then lockdown happened. And totally unprompted by me, I had loads of friends started coming to me all over the world saying, Ben, I've had time to reflect. I'm done with corporate life. Your career looks kind of cool. How do I build my version of that? And it was early lockdown. I had a few things canceled. So I had a bit of time and I gave each person a 1 hour Zoom link. And I was doing 4, 5, 6 a week and helping. I love helping people. That's a big part of my DNA. But after a while, I realized I was saying the same thing to everyone. And it was very inefficient use of my time. And it wasn't dying down. I thought it'd be a week or two and then gone, but it wasn't. In fact, it was getting bigger. So I thought, you know what? Clearly, this is a thing. I'm going to design a workshop. I'm going to call it a portfolio career workshop. I'll run it every week at Wednesday at 4 p.m. And if people call me or ask me and say, Ben, I need career advice, I'll say, is it about portfolio careers? They say, yes. I say, here's the link. See you Wednesday. So I did that and I thought, oh, this is a workshop. I should probably write some slides. So I did a bit of research, interviewed some successful portfolio professionals, some struggling portfolio professionals, some new portfolio professionals, and started codifying what I thought was best practice. And so in the workshop, it was like the 8 steps of launching a portfolio career. So that was it. And then, but then I thought, actually, I should probably have a page on my website that talks about the workshop. So people say, what's in the workshop? I say, here's a link. You know, if you like what you see, sign up.
Yeah.
So it's all really ad hoc. But in essence, the driving force behind the Portfolio Collective is A, I would like helping people, but B, I wanted to tidy up my calendar and help people efficiently. And that's it. So start up as a calendar tidy up. But then I thought, so it started going well. And it was like, started 5 people a week, 10, 15. And it went up and up. And within about a month, it was at 40 people a week because people were telling their friends. But along the way, I also thought, well, I've done the research for some slides. Why don't I write an article? It's not that hard once you've done the research. Yeah. The hard work is the research. So I wrote an article on the future of work and portfolio careers, et cetera. And it got picked up by Google in about 2 or 3 days and got page 1 of Google. And so I started getting SEO traffic in addition to word of mouth. So that was going really well. And then I had people come to my workshop. And then afterwards, they say, the other people on the call are really cool. Can you introduce me? And I thought, well, I haven't really asked their permission. So is that GDPR compliant? I don't really know. But clearly, there's a need for community here. And I should probably give that some thought. And occasionally, I make connections and everyone was fine with it. But it kind of thought, there's probably more to this than a workshop. And when I was doing my research, one stat just kept jumping out at me. It's the one I mentioned earlier, which is by 2030, half of all professionals will be portfolio professionals. I thought, that's massive. Wow.
Yeah.
By 2030, that's like 180 million professionals around the world, by my maths, probably more. And yet portfolio careers are hard and they're lonely. And I just thought, I think I could make it less hard and less lonely. That was it, literally. It was like, it's going to be big. I have some kind of thought leadership in the area, and I think I can make it less hard and less lonely. So with that, I set aside some money, posted an ad on workingstartups.com for a co-founder. About 100 people applied. Fiona, who's now my co-founder and COO, won, as it were. She brought in as our CTO, and we said, right, let's build the Portfolio Collective.
Fantastic. And I mean, I'm a member. I don't know how many members do you have now?
We're up to 6,500. All over the world. It's about 40% UK, but really long tail. Lots of Americans, Germans, French, Indians, Spanish, Canadians, etc. We're actually in about 180 countries, interestingly. It's going really well. And probably more important than the volume is just the quality of the people. Everyone's really smart, really diverse, and they all check their ego at the door. And just kind of listen, learn, collaborate, support each other, challenge each other. It's a really lovely atmosphere. It's almost like a bunch of MBA alumni friends who get together and support each other and challenge each other over a virtual coffee.
You don't have a Slack group yet, right? I think every other community has a Slack group.
Yeah, we don't. We do have messaging on our site. It's not. Yeah. It's slightly more clunky than Slack. We're actually working out the right way to do messaging because clearly Slack is awesome for many things. It's not actually great for running a community, I don't think. I'm in some communities just Slack-based.
Yeah.
And obviously the messaging is great, but some of the other stuff, like where do you keep your video library? You know, how do you find other members? It's kind of, there's some gaps there. So we're actively thinking about the best way to do messaging. Yeah. In my perfect world, I think I would try and white label Slack within our platform or something like that. Now, I'm not sure if you can, but if you can, I think you might be able to, but it might cost a fortune, and we're a cash-strapped startup, so I'm not sure that we would be able to afford it yet.
Probably does cost a fortune, but you never know. You can ask, you know, now that Mark Benioff owns it, right? Maybe he's a very charitable guy, right?
So maybe. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you're aware of Leapus.co.
Leapus.
Yeah, so it's a freelance community. So if you want to use the term freelance, he founded the community. And again, similar to what you described, I've been part of the community, joined during lockdown as well. Great, great community, really friendly people. If I say more freelance professionals, so if I say more creative, you know, UX design. But, you know, you find if I say I'm more of an odd one, odd one on that platform. But again, great community. And I think...
Yeah.
I think that's what it's all about, right? Having the right people on the platform.
Absolutely.
Leaving the ego at the door. It's not about showing off, or, you know, it's not a LinkedIn where you just...
everyone's in sales mode or thought leadership mode or whatever.
Exactly.
People just come and say, look, here's a problem I'm facing. Who can help me? And everyone helps each other out. It's really nice.
And I have to say, I need to spend a lot more time on it. Every time we speak, I keep saying that, but it's open in my browser tab. It's just, you know, if I say nice. Time, but it's a good problem to have. You touched on the future of work. Last time we spoke, we didn't record it. We probably should have. We spoke about the future of work. Where do you see the future of work going besides, obviously, you know, portfolio? Is it a trend? Are we going to stay hybrid? Is it not going to go back?
Obviously there's still a lot of unknown, so I definitely won't say I know the future. I don't think anyone does, and anyone that really does is kidding themselves, because I think there's a few things. Number one, it's way more diverse. Like there won't be one model for like everyone remote, everyone in the office. Yeah, there's a lot more diversity. In my mind, I think the economics of owning an office as a company, or at least a big office with a desk for everyone, become worse and worse and worse, because you know, they were already pretty bad in the past when people spent 8 or 9 or 10 hours a day, 5 days a week in the office. Yeah, that still means, you know, most of the 168 hours a week, they're empty. And then you had things like consulting firms. When I was at McKinsey, this is ages ago, you know, we were only expected to be in the office on Fridays because we were at client offices Monday to Thursday. It's like horrendously inefficient. So I think there'll be a lot more variable approaches to offices. So yeah, as a simple example, for our members, we have a partnership with a company called Othership, who have like spaces in coffee shops, hotel foyers, etc., for having places to meet with free Wi-Fi and sometimes even free coffee all over any city they want to go to, but they don't need to you know, have an office. I think if you're a bigger company, you might want your own variant of that. So do you have a part of a WeWork or other shared space whereby it's really, really flexible? And in my mind, you know, the primary reason for the office these days, or an office, is those meetings that actually require face-to-face time, which is something like a brainstorm or maybe induction or team building. Now, if you think about it, not all those have to be done in an office. They can be done in a hotel conference room. They can be done in a fun activity area somewhere. But a lot of the stuff that people use at their desk in the office, they can do at their desk at home. And so it's provided people have a good space at home, then you know, you don't really need to be in the office. You don't need to be in the office to clear emails. You don't need to be in the office to write a PowerPoint, to write code, you know, et cetera. So in my mind, I'd like to think we get a bit more FaceTime. You know, call me old school or just call me sociable. But you know, I'm back to about 4 or 5 face-to-face meetings a week now. So about one a day. I'd probably like a little bit more than that, but ultimately I never want to go back to, you know, 40 hours a week face-to-face, because it's horribly unproductive. You know, commuting time is unproductive. You know, you can't sort of multitask. You know, there's so many meetings that people only need a snippet of the information. So why not be clearing emails or slacking people while in a meeting? It's, you know, it's just more productive, et cetera. So, and the other thing is, companies are much more open to hiring talent from anywhere else. You know, people aren't obsessed with hiring talent that lives within an hour of the office location. And as you hire remote talent, the reality is most of that work will be done remotely. And then you have these weird scenarios, which is, what if you have a meeting where half the team is in person, half the team is remote? Yeah. It's actually really awkward. And you almost need to get the people sitting around the table to all dial in one by one, because that then is a fair ecosystem where everyone's dialed in. So you then say, so why are they in the office in the first place? Unless there's another reason to be in the office, there's no benefit because they still need to dial in as if they are remote. Yeah, one odd trend I've seen, and I think this is partly because a lot of companies still have offices that they're tied into, is a lot of companies now doing their offsites on-site, because they're saying the offsite is one of the few times where actually you want to get the team together in one place around a whiteboard, but we have an office no one ever uses. Let's use it for the offsite. Yeah. So it's kind of funny. I don't know if that will be a long-term trend. But yeah, there was one of the biggest Valley CEOs said it, I can't remember, Twitter or somewhere else, saying, you know, in a world that's where the war for talent is incredibly competitive, if you say to someone they have to be in the office X days a week and they have a competing offer that says they don't, the one that says they don't will pretty much always win. And so from that perspective, you know, while talent is in the driving seat or has the upper hand, there won't be many companies forcing workers into the office that often.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I know you live quite central in London. I moved down just north of Brighton. So I remember sitting on the train every day with the same commuter group and saying, you know, what are we going to do in 10 years' time? Right. Yeah. I mean, are we still going to commute every day? And we don't.
No.
Right? I'm going in once, twice a week.
Yeah. You know, and how much time did you waste? Like an hour each way from Brighton, plus getting to the station and getting from the station. So probably like 3 hours a day or something.
It is, yeah. It's an hour and a half each way, right? Yeah. And, you know, Wi-Fi, you know, if Southern Train is listening, it's
rubbish. Yeah.
First world problem, so. Right?
It's not entirely unproductive, but it's no. You're probably wasting half of that 3 hours a day that you're commuting.
No, exactly.
That.
Yeah. And it's not efficient, right? So if I can be at my desk if I say much earlier, I'm getting more work done, or I can finish early. And, you know, as you mentioned, right, work-life balance. I think the other point you mentioned is interesting. I'm actually debating if I should open an office group or something and just renting out meeting rooms, right?
Yeah.
On an hourly basis. I think there must be a market for that.
I think there almost certainly is. I mean, I guess the question, if you're really thinking about that, is there are an awful lot of offices that are either underutilized now or will be when those leases run out. Exactly. So they'll all be trying to innovate themselves. So I'd probably steer clear of anything to do with offices for a while, unless it's converting offices into apartments, which is probably going to be a decent business for a while.
Yeah, I mean, one startup I'm working with, we just, you know, increased our office space, which sounds crazy, but then we pay extra for each meeting room, right?
And
build a meeting room in there, because that's what we really need, right? We need two or three meeting rooms. And meetings where two people are, you know, in one space and one person is somewhere else, it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
Ben, unfortunately, I mean, I could go on. We're running out of time.
Yeah.
But if you had one last piece of advice for anyone who wants to start out as a portfolio professional, what would it be?
So one of the things that too many people try to skim and you can't is you really need to kind of say, what kind of portfolio professional am I? And what's my story? Because it's easy when you enter the economy to get a bit lost or to get a bit commoditized. To have an offering that's a bit samey. So you really need to take the time to say, what are my ninja skills? What are my passions? And write a long list of all the ways you could make money, all the things that make you happy, all the things the world needs, all the areas where you think you have some distinctive advantage. Package that up into a story, an offering or a service that makes sense and a personal brand that makes sense. When you do that, and it might take a few iterations, but when you do that, you're happier. You tell your story more convincingly. You stand out from the crowd. You get sought out as opposed to always having to pitch for work. Yeah. And when you're sought out, you can typically up your rates because it's less competitive. So just be really, really thoughtful and put the time in up front. And then after that, keep iterating. Maybe once a quarter, maybe once every 6 months, say, you know, is my personal story offering the right one? Is my personal brand still working for me, et cetera?
Yeah.
You've got to put, as a portfolio professional, you are a one-person business. Yeah. Businesses need a strategy. Businesses need a brand. Businesses need to stand for something. Businesses need almost a price list. You know, there's a whole load of things you need. So put the effort in rather than just doing work.
Brilliant. That's good advice. I mean, something I follow, of course.
Absolutely.
I have reinvented myself a couple of times since I started.
As you need to,
Exactly. It's an iteration.
Yep.
Ben, thank you so much for your time.
A pleasure.
I might get you back at some point. There's so much to talk about.
Oh, yeah. We could go for hours. One of my favorite subjects.
Well, no, thank you so much.
No worries.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Did you enjoy today's experience? If you did, please leave me a 5-star rating on the outlet you're listening to. And tell others about the show as well. Do you have ideas for guests? Any comments or questions? Please email me to podcast@valudapartners.com. And don't forget to check out www.valudapartners.com and subscribe to my monthly newsletter filled with insights on leadership and self-development articles. Until next time, this is your host, Volker Valuda.